Hello, everybody, and welcome to Linux the Rest of Us, episode 124. Your favorite show about Linux coming to you right now. I'm part of the equation that's bringing you this awesome Linux show. My name's Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, a.k.a. The Ice Machine, and I am blessed each week to be co-piloting with my favorite Linux person, Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, a.k.a. Linux Maven. How's it going, Door?
Hey, man. I don't know about blessed, man. That there's a bit strong words.
I'm not religious or spiritual really at all, but when I think about where I was 3 years ago and where I am now, that's an appropriate word to me.
Ah, gotcha. Yeah. 3 years ago, I was probably watching pointless television right about now.
3 years ago, you were listening to Podnets Daily going, I need to send in a voicemail of that show.
Yeah, true.
And I was listening to him.
Yeah.
So, before we get into the meat of the show, we please just wanted to thank everyone who's been using our podnets.com/Amazon link. Your purchases are helping the network, and we really, really do appreciate it. However, if you haven't used it yet for whatever reason, and you are looking at making any purchases on Amazon, please go to podnets.com/Amazon. It takes you directly to Amazon. You're going to be making those same purchases. However, we will get a small commission and use that to make the shows and the network better in the future. So we thank you for it.
Yep, absolutely. And hopefully, under a month from this time frame, we'll have Chrome, Firefox extensions that should make it painless for everyone.
Fantastic.
Absolutely. Once again, we're going to have a basic that has nothing to do directly with Linux. I can lie and say, well, you know, these servers that we're talking about run on Linux. You know, that's not really, it's true, but that's not, yeah, whatever. Okay. A lot of people, I'll just say, don't understand the full caveat of choices on how you can, quote unquote, I say, pwn Google and find what you want to find. I encourage everyone to take this image that's going to be linked in the show notes. Keep it by the desk that you use the most, whether it be work or home, whichever one you do most of your Googling from. This is a great image to have. It explains 5 things you can do. 5 things, yes, you can do in a Google search. You can actually do at least 10 different things, but here's 5 main things you can do in a Google search. Number 1, if you want to search all of podnuts.com, you go to Google. You don't need a custom search box on podnuts.com, okay? Go to Google and type SITE:// podnuts.com. And then anything after that will only search the podnuts.com domain. Here's a tip. Do not put in the www on any domain. Just put the name .com or .net or .org, just that part. And anything you search will only search that domain. Second one, Google has done a lot of, I call it analog things in the background. And by analog, I mean they take words that mean similar things and can link them together. Their example in this is college, higher education, and university all basically mean the same thing. So if you use tilde college, it will also find higher education and university in the search. So if you put in tilde test, it will also find quiz or exam. Okay? Those 2 things alone should make you a much more of a powerful Googler searcher, okay? There's more. Third, enter multi-word phrases in quotes. Here's the example I give. When I want to find notes previously entered for Linux for the Rest of Us, I go to Google, site podnuts.com, space quote, running space time colon quote. Because every show posting has running space time colon in that posting, and that's not in the forums, it's not anyplace else, it's just in those show postings. Then if I know it's Android App Addicts, I follow it with another quote, Android App Addicts, or if it's Podnuts Pro, you know, quote Podnuts space Pro. So there's, you know, using those quotes help a lot. And there's two more. The minus sign, okay? If I want to look up this all this web stuff, but I don't want anything .NET, and they keep showing up in my results, and I don't want to know about .NET, I'm clearly typing something else. At the end, put minus sign, no space, just minus sign, .NET. And now no search result will have .NET in it. Yeah, all search results will not have .NET in it. Okay, that is a huge plus when you want to get rid of stuff out of your search results. Last tip. If you want to search for a period in time, a number, or a dollar amount, you can use two dots. Okay, period in time. Their example is years. They use 2008.2010, no spaces. That means it's going to look for 2008, 2009, or 2010. It's going to look for a range of numbers. You can also use it, like if you're helping Eric Saucey find a list for his show, Unbootables, you could type in 35.65, because he always has these humongous lists on his shows. Or if you're looking for dollar amounts, if you're looking for Linux desktop computer, and you're looking for one between $100 and $200, you simply put in $100.$200, and you'll find dollar amounts between $100 and $200. Those five things, some other search engines do use some of these exact same things, and you can use them there too, but these are five that can be definitely used at Google right now and make it much, much easier for you to find what you're looking for.
Yeah, I gotta say, this was posted on Google Plus yesterday or the day before, and it could not have come at a greater time, because I've been rooting and ROMing a lot of my devices the past 3 or 4 days, and being able to really, really just get to the gist. Because before, if I was searching for specific instructions, I'd have, you know, two or three Lilliputing tabs open, two or three How to Geek tabs open, and be pouring through, you know, forum posts and this and that. But man, like today, I was looking up some stuff for a device of mine using the instructions provided on this picture, and it was like I just sliced away all the stuff I didn't need, and it was just served me right on that little platter. It's crazy.
Yeah, and I'll say I got this link from a share from someone else who shared it from Linda Laurie, Lawrey. So, Linda, I doubt you're listening, but I'm still going to say thank you. That was a very good link. I knew about this and a couple other things, but it's always good to have a printout next to you in times of need.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're, if you're utilizing Google, you know, in your job, or any sort of search engine in your job, you're doing like doing research, students, this would be great for. So it's a wide variety of people, because, you know, you realize, yes, there are tools to narrow it down, and you think, well, I'll get to them eventually. But once you really start implementing them and realizing how easy it is to do it, it's a whole new world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very cool.
Okay. This next one, it's kind of a side thing where it starts out fluffy, but then it gets good stuff. Okay. Dan Washko is a guy I've been listening to for a couple years. He now also has a string of podcasts on Hacker Public Radio, and it's called Linux in the Shell. Highly encourage people to not only listen to that, but download it and keep those files in your personal library for future reference. Hear me now, believe me later. Okay, that's all I'll say. And he reminded me how sometimes people have to be reminded to not settle on stuff, okay? He is a bit of a window manager / desktop fanboy. He loves the fact that he can load up any distro and load up any desktop environment. And I was talking to Chris, the guy who helped me with DoorDoorGeek.com. He loaded Crubuntu, C-H-R-U-B-U-N-T-U, on his Chromebook. And he said, well, I needed it to do some design stuff in FTP, and I'm finding the desktop a little laggy. Did you find it laggy? To which I quickly replied, no, but I did not leave Unity as the default desktop, like, immediately. As soon as I got into the Unity desktop, oh, that's great, install other desktop. Like, very first thing I actually did. Okay, and it's not hard, okay? Sudo apt-get install shubuntu-desktop. You have all the XFCE desktop. Sudo apt-get install lubuntu-desktop. You have LXDE and a complete LXDE desktop. I loaded awesome because I'm an awesome kind of guy. I like keyboard manipulation of my entire environment. Or you could load any other desktop. And then I stopped and thought. I was reminded Dan mentioned this link on one of his shows. And it was xwinman.org. xwinman.org. And there's two links on that site I wanted to share. One is called Other Window Managers, and one is called Other Desktop Environments. Okay. It's kind of hard to explain the differences between the two because quite often the lines get blurred and crossed. A window manager goes as far as a Windows manager wants to go, and a desktop environment can go as far as a desktop environment wants to go. They can sometimes be in the same area. Okay. Window manager is typically the backbone skeleton manipulation of the GUI environment. The window borders, the window frames, the desktop layout, that kind of thing. Not the desktop layout. The desktop framework, I'll say. And then the actual filler where you can put themes and stuff is typically the desktop in environment. Mm-hmm. Quite often, newer users don't have any idea about window managers. They just know desktops, and that's it. And that's fine. But like, for instance, one of the window managers is awesome. But I use it like a desktop environment. But it's a window manager. So that kind of bleeds into the other environment. KDE has its own window manager. So when you load KDE, it goes and takes on the other side. It takes KWin, I believe, and uses it. If you want to get a quick, mind-blowing list of choices, you go to the window manager. Window and older desktops were Windows managers. Newer desktops are typically just desktops, not window managers. I confuse myself even when I talk about this, but if you want to get completely blown away, window managers for Xlink, you go there and you scroll and there's at least 70 window managers. Some of them are no longer being maintained. Some of them are obsolete and old, but there's a lot, a whole lot to pick from. So when people say, what lightweight desktop should I use? Sometimes you don't want a desktop. All you want is a window manager. So this might hold some good lists and good choices for everybody.
Yeah, I knew that there was a variety of them out there, but nowhere near to this degree. Wow. Yeah, geez. If you like to distro hop and test out different environments, maybe settle on a little play space and start injecting some of these into your workflow and see what they do for you, because, man, you could customize quite a bit more if you switch these out along with other desktop environments, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, because that's the whole thing. Switching out distros is just one part of it. Switching out desktops is a whole nother arena of possibilities. So if somebody really wants to get in here and toy around and see all choices, I will salute you and say I'll talk to you in a month. Have fun.
Yep. Sounds good.
All right. We have a quick piece of audio we got sent in, but first, we got to talk about Ubuntu and all their recent announcements here as of late.
Mm-hmm.
Ubuntu Touch, now we know, is the quote-unquote official name for this. Ubuntu Touch is tablet slash phone slash mobile touchscreen interface. From everything I gather, this is not Unity. It might be called Unity and have similar things to, about Unity, but this is actually its own beast that they're designing up. And if you go to Lilliputian, Canonical, this is the posting title, Canonical offers guide for porting Ubuntu Touch to run on most Android devices. I read that and I was kind of blown away. What do you mean? Well, because here's the gimmick behind it. And I will say, this is a gimmick, okay? Ubuntu Touch is not Ubuntu Touch. Ubuntu Touch is a customized Cyanogen mod ROM. Heavily customized. I will say that. Heavily, heavily, heavily customized. To where it's really only running the CM kernel. It's not running any Davlix stack, no Java VMing, but it is using the CM kernel backbone, infrastructure, if you will. So because of that, you technically could make Ubuntu Touch run on anything that CM10 runs on. That was the sound of the door opening. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So expect to see lots and lots and lots of ROMs coming out for multiple devices, all running Ubuntu. On a lot of them, the phones probably won't work. The SMS probably won't work. All this other stuff won't work, but it'll be, I think, cool to test, play with. And supposedly, XDA basically said openly to Canonical, we do this for a living. We know ROMs. Let us help you. No official response, but supposedly they put it out there. And I will say there's a list on wiki.ubuntu.com, the devices that are works in progresses. Wow. Sony Xperia, you're ready to roll with it. How to unlock, how to install, downloadable code. I can never pronounce this one phone. Huawei.
It's Huawei.
Huawei, thank you. Which is a very popular brand, at least in China. Mm-hmm. Bam, full unlocking, install, and downloads. HTC One X. Part of it is in working process, part of it is working. ASUS Transformer. TF700T, downloadable and runnable. So it's only going to get on more devices, more popular as time goes on. I'm interested, I'll say. At least this isn't complete vaporware.
Yep. Yeah. They put something out there, which is nice. I was excited about it. In fact, I didn't even know about the announcement until Dor told me. He sent me a Vox late one night and was like, hey, tomorrow Canonical is announcing something. And we went to the site and they had the countdown thing and I was like, oh, hey, I'm excited. So that was on a Tuesday, and then on Thursday they put the images up.
Yeah.
And I have a spare Nexus 7 that I bought for testing and just for other, you know, uses around the house and whatever. So I threw this on there day one, like that morning. I was just, boom, I got it on there. And it wasn't that hard. I mean, I'm experienced, you know, rooting and ROMing devices. So, but even that being said, very, very clear and concise instructions. And I believe I followed, it might have been a link to an Ubuntu wiki from Lilliputian, but I'll have to look it up and I'll put it in the show notes later. That being said, I was very, very excited. I got it on there. And after playing with it for a few minutes, I was disappointed. And before I say anything else, I want to say, yes, I understand it's a developer preview. Okay? I get that.
But we all have higher hopes than just a developer preview.
Right. But So, and developer preview is a vague term. You know, you could come to them and say, well, there's this, this, and that, and then they could just say, well, it is a developer preview. You know, that can mean a variety of things. I understand that it means that it's basis level, and I will talk specifically about a few things which I was disappointed on. But despite all the disappointment, the navigation around the interface itself was nice, was quite fluid. It performed, for the most part, just like it did in all the previews that we saw. Not quite as snappy. And, I mean, I'm running on a Nexus 7, so that's arguably one of the most higher-end mobile devices on the market. Okay, so I'm not running it on some thing I ported it to that wasn't intended for. I mean, all the Nexus devices are supposed to be 100%, boom, good. The web browser worked. Wi-Fi worked, which I was happy. I could actually get online and do things with it. Obviously, there are no apps for it yet. There are links to apps, which suggests you can go download them, but they aren't active yet. And I understand, and I wasn't disappointed at that. I was like, but it's they went out of their way to create, like, one of the best ways I can describe it is, you know how you go into, like one of those, development apartments? Like, it has the front door, and it has, like, the oven there, but you get closer to the oven, and it's all plastic. There is no working oven there, but it looks just like an oven. And you go to open the fridge, but you realize it's just a big plastic box in the shape of a refrigerator. There's no actual refrigerator there, but it looks exactly like a fridge. I felt a lot like that when I was going around the interface, because they had to have these facsimiles up to at least show us what it will look like when it's functional, and that I was fine with. For instance, they showed how you would purchase content in the way of, like, movies and albums, and you could actually, instead of just showing a page of what it will look like, you can actually, like, scroll through some of the content to purchase it, which I thought was cool. One of them was Iron Man 3. I was like, okay, obviously this is BS. That isn't even out in theaters yet. But then I had to settle my inner geek down, right? But it was cool. A lot of that was fluid. If you think of, like, Apple's Overflow, like scrolling through, like, in iTunes, it was a lot like that. So that was nice. The web browser was a little laggy. When I first booted up Gmail, it insisted that I needed to go to iTunes to download the mobile version of Gmail, which I thought was, it was trying to direct me to iTunes to do something, or no, it was trying to direct me to the Apple App Store to download something, which I thought was hilarious. I was like, why would it be doing that? That's so silly, whatever. But it was just a simple Gmail interface. It was a little slow, but like I said, this is a developer preview, it was fine. The one thing that I was disappointed on, and Dora, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you think of, In this case, specifically developer preview, wouldn't you say that a lot of, like, the third-party, like, developer support isn't there yet?
Well, that's where I think it falls short of developer preview. I wouldn't say this is a developer preview. I would say it's a carrier preview. Developer preview implies it's ready for developers. For me to develop a door-to-door geek app on it or something, and to me it appears like it's not quite ready for that.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I would say that I was mildly disappointed with the entire experience, but the majority of that disappointment came from how unpolished some of the Ubuntu things were that were displayed during the live demos, specifically the welcome screen. Right? Instead of being able to create your own profile, you're given a stock profile for a woman named Lola.
Right.
And you have all sorts of correspondence from her friends and, like, her, you know, chat history and this and that. So, but what one of the things that I thought was really cool about the welcome screen in all the videos that I saw was the fact that, you know, it did move with the time. And it showed, you know, your incoming messages and this and that.
Right.
But with this, it was just a stock image. The clock worked. The clock was in, several people mentioned this, the clock on the welcome screen wasn't in sync with the clock on the actual system. It was off by 2 or 3 minutes always.
Right.
But all of those things that they're supposed to be creating for this environment that they're responsible for, like, sort of like the groundwork, like having that work right off the bat and be fluid and some of the other like Ubuntu elements that they, I will say that as far as the different scrolling from all the edges, that worked quite well, considering how early this is. But it was a lot of those little things that they touted in the videos that weren't 100% there. I wouldn't even say they were 50% there. They were just kind of thrown up there just as kind of placeholders for now. Right. And I've never developed an OS or a mobile OS or any sort of, you know, touchscreen interface, nothing. So, but what I would have expected from them as a user at this state is, or as a developer, I would say, is to have at least some of that a little more done. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Okay. Obviously the apps aren't there yet because they haven't been created yet, but I would say I was still impressed. I was a little disappointed with a lot of things that I was shown and led to believe that were working at that point, but then I got it on the device and it wasn't working. Some people have thrown it on their devices for 5 or 10 minutes and then took it off, right? Just like, whatever. I tried it. I left it on there for 3 days and I actually used it aside from my phone as my main, just kind of carry all device. And I really just did basic web surfing on it and, you know, checked email, things like that, because that's all I really could do. But I am very hopeful. The interface is very fluid. I'm sure it's only going to get better. And yeah, I cannot wait for that social integration to be finely tuned and to have it be a personal experience. I will say that the way that they did approach it, having all of that content for that one person will at least let you know how it would have been. So that was nice to a certain degree, but I was still a tad disappointed. And I just have to be honest with you.
I think the closest way I can relate this is if you've ever seen like websites or magazines or something that's in development, they typically have all the words filled with, I think it's called ipsum, which is like Latin.
Right.
Gibberish.
Yep, it's all gibberish, yep.
Right. A fair amount of the entire interface is gibberish. It's not really that. It's something that's there. You click it, nothing happens.
Yep.
You know, stuff like that. I'll say on the bright side, it's not complete vaporware. On the downside, it's not close to as far as people were hoping it was. And on some devices, much less than expected because of the hardware profile. I'm going to play a little piece of audio here. It's from Sean Johnson, Android App Addicts, Podnuts. He is the closest thing I know to a normal Android guy. He's a hardworking guy, works a lot every day, has his Android device, loves hacking and tweaking on that as a normal person, runs Windows at home and Linux at home, uses whatever system he needs to get his job done kind of thing, whatever thing he's trying to do. And I wanted him, in his own words, to tell us what he thought of it, because he was almost unaware of the hype. He knew Ubuntu was doing something. He wasn't watching the blogs, reading all this kind of stuff. He was aware of it, and he knew when it was coming out, and he knew when it did come out. Can somebody tell me so I can try to put it on my phone? He has a Samsung Galaxy Nexus on Verizon. Note, I said Verizon, because they're horrible for antenna hardware. But he sent us a piece of audio, and I'm going to play that right now.
Hey, guys. It's your buddy Dirty Thumbs here. Just want to send in a message here about my brief experience with the Ubuntu Mobile. And before I do that, let me just say that I am on a Verizon Samsung Galaxy Nexus. So there was no official developer release for my phone. It was for the GSM models. But with all developers, there was a port for my phone. So firstly, the act of actually installing the OS was very painless. It was basically the same way as installing any custom ROM. Boot into your recovery, wipe your cache, Talvik, factory store, and flash the zip. And it was as simple as that. I'd say it took about a minute and a half to reboot. But once it did, It looked great. Very crisp screen. It was weird seeing the entire screen real estate being used by the OS. That was definitely odd not seeing my lit up soft keys. But I quickly got used to that because everything is swipe related. Left to right, right to left, up and down. Everything brings up different kinds of menus, applications, currently running applications. And to go into your Wi-Fi, configure that. The one thing that didn't work, obviously, for everybody, I believe, was you have no cell service. So that being said, I knew that this was just basically a test for me to get it on my phone and see what it's going to look like down the road, how pretty it would look. So I did have issues logging into my Gmail account. I couldn't get into my Gmail account. I had read that the camera didn't work, but for me it worked. So I don't know if that was just somebody had that issue. But the camera worked for me, so it was kind of a pretty, it was a pretty neat looking camera application. There was some standard applications on there, I believe Pinterest and Facebook, Twitter, and the Twitter was basically full of, how can I explain, kind of reminding me of when you buy a picture frame and it comes with that unknown family picture inside the frame. It was kind of like that. It was like all this stuff, same with the contacts, preloaded with just, I guess basically so you can see how it's gonna look. So I don't know it's a developer release, so. But it really did nothing for me other than go, oh, this looks really pretty. I can't wait till everything works. But I could see, as far as the swiping without the soft keys, I could totally get used to that. I think at first it seemed kind of odd that was, they were going to be gone. But to gain, even that half inch or, quarter inch of real estate was kind of cool. So I only ran it for about 10 minutes. So I apologize for a really bad review on it, but that's pretty much my review. Looks pretty, looks like it has great potential, but kind of stunk. All right, guys, keep it dirty.
Sean, you'll be happy to know I just threw a dollop of mud on the floor.
Very cool. I definitely thank Sean for that, and I'll say, I can tell you why he only kept it on his phone for 10 minutes. Because after putting it on and after looking at that picture frame, other person's content, and after clicking stuff and having it not working, he literally just said, "What in the hell is the point of this?" and took it off his device.
Yep. And I'm glad that we got Sean to bring in his point of view, because obviously, he had the point of view of the phone. I had the point of view of the tablet. If it was on my daily device that I required being used all the way, yeah, I probably would have lasted about as long, if not a shorter period of time. However, I was fortunate enough to have a device I knew I didn't absolutely need for my day-to-day workflow, and I was able to keep it on there a little bit longer because I was hoping that my initial reaction was wrong, and maybe I was just disappointed. And I would find some more jewels to sort of speak highly about, but I didn't. I mean, overall, I would say I'm hopeful with where it's going. And from what I understand, I was reading today, there are daily updates and builds being updated every day now. So it's going to get better. And, some traction is gaining on it. More people are making it better. So, yeah. I also didn't miss the on-screen buttons at all. Swiping from the edges was a little bit weird. I actually did just, I was having dinner with my wife and I handed it to her and I said, I want you to use this for maybe 3 or 4 minutes. Don't say a word. Just let me know what you think about it. Because she uses Ubuntu on her laptop and she has in the past for years, but to no degree that, you or I would. And I could see her like looking for tactile buttons. Or I'm sorry, on-screen buttons, and then she did after a while sort of get to the swiping, And then she was having problems with, she was always pulling down the settings. So I guided her through like one or two things. And she said she liked it, but a lot of it was just unusable. But right. That's to be expected at this point.
Yeah. The only last three things I'll say about it was, the only experience we don't know somebody personally who's had is on the Nexus 10. Mm-hmm. From what I understand, the only people with the true tablet interface were people on the Nexus 10. Even people on the Nexus 7 are getting the phone interface.
Oh, okay.
And that's okay. You know, I mean, that's no... You know, so what? That's what it is. Number two, it almost doesn't matter, hear me out, how much work they have to do. They at least did this. This shows intent, as far as I'm concerned. The guy's a millionaire. He can hire 20, 50, 100 people if he wants. So the amount of work is almost insignificant, because it will get done when he wants it to get done. Mark Shuttleworth, because he's rich. So I'm just glad to see they are doing something, and it's not complete vaporware. Right now, it's just, like you said, the cardboard cutout of the real thing. But at least it's something. And I just hope that they actually get real hardware vendors to agree to put this on hardware, because Mozilla Firefox announced 18 carriers worldwide have already made agreements and will carry Firefox OS phones. I think only one in the U.S., and I think it was Sprint, but I'm not positive.
That's correct.
So there will be competition. Competition is getting higher. It's getting deeper. It's getting tighter. I like that.
Yeah, the mobile landscape is changing. In the next 18 months, I mean, we'll see. Wow. And I mean, I could go off and on. I mean, I could go on forever about Firefox OS. Let's just say I'm very hopeful for the near future, and it's really influencing my potential Android device purchases. And three out of my four phones, their contracts are up with Sprint, or up for renewal, I should say, between March and April, or March and May. So whereas I would have just gone out and probably got the latest and greatest and upgraded, now I'm going to take a step back and realize, hey, I don't need a, you know, 8-core phone right now. You know, right. I'm perfectly happy with what I have now and my other devices. So, yeah.
Yeah, hard choices coming ahead for us all.
Oh, yes. So, if you guys were thinking about using it, if you have a device, you can. I'm sure even if you try the interface now or in another week, it's going to be that much better. So, give it a try. Feel free to send an email to podcast@linuxforrestofus.com and let us know your experience with Ubuntu Touch.
Yeah, I'm encouraged to see where it's at in like 2 months and then 2 months and then 2 months, because supposedly by October, they're going to have shipping code done. Yeah, ready to go. So, we'll have to wait and see. Next, I have two Raspberry Pi links, because I can. First one is at, of course, raspberrypi.org, and it's MRI image A analysis. What people got to understand is that this is actually huge, okay? We talked months ago about a guy in Brazil doing open source projects for the healthcare industry itself. That onto itself is very unique in like the last, let's say, 5, 6, 20, 80 years, you know, healthcare, open source kind of stuff. He was breaking ground, I'll say. This is another kind of thing that's actually breaking ground. Having a $25, now they have the $25 version, having a $25 computer able to take MRI output files and do analysis on them is a huge deal for third world countries or health places that just can't afford insane hardware. I just thought this was cool just because it shows you people are not just turning their Raspberry Pi into a 80s arcade main cabinet, but they're actually doing production, functional, intensive work on them.
worthwhile endeavors.
Testify.
Yes.
Absolutely. And then with that, our next link, raspberrypi.org.
Oh, yes.
Open arena for the Raspberry Pi. So we just went from one extreme spectrum to the other. And I will say, what I did not like about this posting was they did not have a direct link to Open Arena running on the Raspberry Pi. So they have a link to Quake 3 running on the Raspberry Pi. There's also a link in the show to Open Arena running on the Raspberry Pi. And I can't say enough. I am deathly shocked at how well this all runs on $35 computer. I mean, my last computer was definitely worth more than $35, and I don't think it ran this good.
Probably not.
No, didn't, no. And yeah, it's partially because I'm running all this other stuff on top of my operating system, and this is honed. It's like a distribution. You boot it up, you play Quake 3. You don't do other stuff on it, or you play Open Arena. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, dude, you need a dedicated computer to do this kind of gaming on it. You now got one for less than a price of a Ruth Chris steak.
Yep. Yeah. I love to see things like this come up. More so the MRI, the ability to take that data and analyze it on a small machine like this. But yeah, even seeing what was once a high-end, you know, first-person shooter running on... and running well on this tiny little computer is just, man, we're here, man. We're in the future.
Yeah.
It's so cool to see what people are doing with these tiny little devices.
Yeah, and people are all right now hip on the idea of wearable computers. This is the size of a credit card, okay?
Mm-hmm.
It could very easily be in your pocket. I'll just say that. Okay, this next link I wanted to bring up, I have no clue how old this distribution is or how long it's been around. I will admit, it's new to me. It's been around for at least a little while. I'm very sure of that. But it's a lightweight distribution with the description simple by design. To me, this is a mental... In my mind, it's a competitor, direct competitor to Solus OS. I love competition. It makes everybody better, okay? I still use day-to-day Solus OS and like it a lot, okay? I'm going to load this one up here on another computer and play with it. It's called Descent OS, like the old video game Descent.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it just looks like a simple desktop. It has like a Mac-style bar, the bars on the left side. And it's just a light GNOME 2-looking desktop. We aim to modernize the GNOME 2 desktop. So I believe it's actually using GNOME 2 itself, sorry. I'm okay with that. I'm very okay with that, in fact. So I'm going to load this thing up, try it. Honestly, encourage people who like familiar desktop environments, dare I say, load this up in a VM, take a poke around, see what you think about it. I personally like it. And they even have a lot of merchandise, too, so they're doing something right. They got sweat jackets, stickers, keychains, ceramic mugs. They got going on.
Do they have any small bibs?
Don't see a bib, but you could get a t-shirt and a pair of scissors, and you'll be in there.
There you go. All
right. They have a journal. I'm on it. Oh, they have a beer stein. See, they're smart people.
Yep. Ordered.
Ordered. Smart people. That's what I'm going to say. So I encourage those people to play with this. I'm not going to say it's going to take the place of Black Hammer's Voyager. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't dare say that, but I think it's cool.
Yeah, I love seeing these pop up, especially ones I've never heard of and that have apparently been around a while. You know, because you'd think after you scroll through DistroWatch every you know, twice a week for 2 or 3 years, you would have at least heard of some of these, but they're cropping up. And I'm not only am I surprised that they've been around for a while and that I'm hearing about them now, but that they have quite ravenous communities behind them who have been using them for quite a while. So,
right. Yeah, I believe I heard about this on Sunday morning Linux review. I could be mistaken, but I'm 90-ish% sure I heard it there. Here's the thing I'll throw out there. Not only do they have 32-bit and 64-bit versions, they have a PowerPC version. So Ooh. If you have yourself old Mac hardware and you want to repurpose it, you might have something here to try on it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep, that's totally possible. I have a couple old Macs here, and my experience with that very task has not been pleasant. So,
yeah, I'm sure.
Oh, wow.
Okay, next thing is really, this is a setup. It's a link over at linuxlinks.com. 9 of the best free, they're all free, 9 of the best free Linux terminal emulators. A lot of people don't think a lot about what terminal emulator you use. There are terminal emulators by default that are really light, that are really full-featured, that have coloring options, that have, you know, all kinds of gambits of choices, just like desktop in environments, dare I say. And here's a list of 9 of them. GNOME Terminal, Terminator, UR, XVT, RocksTerm, LXTerm, XTerm, Console, blah, 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 blah. Choice is always good, and I encourage people, if you use the terminal at all, check out some of these other terminals. Now, secondary, there's also a link that's in the same part that goes to linuxnov.com. And this is a complete guide to configure terminal emulator. Dare I say, Terminator is maybe the most customizable, full-featured terminal that I've played with. You can literally, on the fly, do stuff like split screen. I don't know too many other terminals that can do that. I'll say that.
Split screen? You mean like two terminals in the same window?
Two terminals in the exact same window, and then you can take one of them, split them again, and take one of them and split them again. You could literally have 10 terminal sessions going one time in one window.
That's crazy.
Yeah. And you can do a lot more than that. You can set up custom commands. So if you always SSH into this one box, you can literally just have it as control P or whatever. I don't know. You hit that key combination and voila, it runs your command. This is the kind of terminal that can really take repetitive task and business type task, simplify them much, much, much more to where you literally can get them done a lot quicker.
Hmm.
Yeah, definitely like that one. I'm a fan of that one and Guake. G-U-A-K-E. Oh, yeah.
Love me some Guake. Yeah, yeah. And then the more that I've used Guake before, and I've had it installed on different systems and things, but the more I'm using the command line now, I need to settle on one of these that I'm comfortable in, because bringing up the stock one in with the whatever distro I'm using at the time is fine, but it'll give me about much more incentive to like download that first along with some of my other apps and then rely on it that much more. So that's what I need to work on.
Yeah, I definitely encourage people, using the default one is fine, but don't limit yourself or think that there's no other choices. Okay, this next link I'm going to mention, even though Ven Stone from Linux Gamecast, who now, he's my Linux gaming litmus test. I ask him stuff about gaming, and I know he's going to answer me utterly honestly and fair, very impartial kind of thing. I found this site called Peng penguspy.com. The main reason I liked this site and it caught my eye was it gave me at least thumbnails of the games in every way I could search or find apps games in this site. I always saw thumbnail previews instead of just names. And I like the fact I get a preview before I click. But he said the site's a little slow sometimes to put stuff up. Of course, it doesn't have every game. He said there are some good games that they fail to put up for a couple months. And there are updates that they sometimes fail to put up in a timely fashion. Venn has high standards with this kind of thing. So I asked him. He said, yeah, it's good to play around with. It's good to visit. But don't make this your one and only Linux game site. So I say add this to your list.
It's always good to view the alternatives, see what else is out there.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they actually list under MMORPG, Second Life, might be like one of the reasons why this got knocked down a notch in his mind. Okay. Now I will say it only got 6 out of 10 stars, which I think, you know, give them just a skosh of credibility back. Not a lot, but something.
Yep. They'll take it, I'm sure.
Yeah. And, yeah, they have flight sims, board games, arcade games, FPSs. Ooh, 31 FPSs. I'm going to send this to Paul. Well, he does our notes, so he's going to kind of see this. Because he was looking for first-person shooters that were, what's the word I'm looking for again? Campaign mode, not multiplayer.
Right, yeah.
There's more than a couple in here, I guarantee. He's gonna, man, I hope he still has time to do our notes.
If our notes dip off after a while, then we'll know why. And we'll quite frankly, it'll be our fault.
Yeah, well, you know, could be worse. Okay, so I'm going to personally keep that in my little rotation. This next one I had to bring to the show just because of the name of the title. Okay, this is at instructables.com. I kind of feel vexed about this because to actually see this, you have to click through 5 different pages to see everything. But so you get more ads. Oh joy. But the name of the posting is Cheech and Chong Computing. The link made me click it. I couldn't help it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Gist of it is this guy has what equates to a 8 to 10 year old laptop computer. And he wants to run it diskless. Okay, so what he does, he goes through the steps, I think around 4th page or 5 page, because there's not much content per each page. He gets into booting this computer diskless into basically a network terminal session, into like a Pixie-type booting environment, to where all of the actual work is being done on a back-end computer or server. I like the idea of repurposing archaic hardware into a usable, functional device.
So he basically took an old laptop and turned it into a dumb terminal? Would that be an easy way to explain it?
Yeah, but today's hipsters call it thin clients.
Okay, yeah.
But yes, it is a terminal.
Yes.
But you know, you got to have that hipster lingo down for everybody. Or as Jonathan might say, you're running it on your local cloud.
Dude, I don't know if you guys heard that, but that was him taking the words right out of my mouth. A lot of saliva just hit my keyboard. I was just about to say, Jonathan would repurpose that some other way. Not saying the word cloud, because yeah. He hates the sky. It's the only reason he doesn't like it. He just doesn't like anything in the sky. Airplanes, birds, in-flight basketballs, nothing like that.
Exactly. So if you have incredibly old hardware that you expect to be running in the same place a lot, i.e. your house, or i.e. your job, or your office, or whatever, I really encourage you guys, don't just throw away old hardware. Take a look at this and see if you can repurpose it. Because you could take an old laptop, quite literally break the hinge, set it up someplace in your kitchen or something to where it's out of the way, and you could have your screen up here and your keyboard down there and use it like a dumb terminal. And it will work. And it's, you know, Cheech and Chong computing.
Yeah, I have a laptop from an old client of mine that I got in a... Anyway, I acquired this legitimately, but it there are some problems with it. I think that with the limitations it has, it might suit just fine for a purpose like this. So, yeah, I'll give this a try. It'll have to be when I get back from Nelf, because I'm far too busy right now.
Gotcha. Yeah, I just thought it was cool. And I'm gonna, and part of the reason I put it in the notes is so later I can go to Google and do a site search, Linux for the Rest of Us quotes, running time quotes, and Cheech and Chong. Yeah, bam, boom, it's there.
I will, there you go.
And honestly, guys, some of the reason I bring some of the stuff to the show is so I personally now have my archive of data. When someone asks me a question, I know I can Google search for it on PodNuts. I digress, because that was really self-serving. Okay. I honestly cannot remember where I had this question, but it was in my Git pocket from a month ago, so I don't remember who it was. Somebody wanted to know, if I had ISO files, how could I update the content in the ISO file without completely uncompressing the ISO file, making the updates, and then recompressing that file, because that is a very lengthy process. And I was bouncing around a couple ideas, and I stumbled across this. It's called Z-Sync, Z or Z-S-Y-N-C. It's basically an application that will let you virtually open up ISOs, browse them, update them, and it will save all the changes back inside that ISO file. Granted, this is a niche need. Not a lot of people are going to need this, but if you do, you got it now. And I know one of the guys who would probably benefit from this, or who could benefit from this a great deal, is Corey Knapp, blind computer technician who makes his living, a large part of his living, off of custom Windows installations, i.e. ISO files, where when stuff changes, he has to basically rebuild those ISO files from scratch. This might make it to where his kind of task is now much shorter, much more direct. So he's one of the guys I wanted to give this link to and see if he could find a use for it.
If you haven't listened to his one of his recent episodes of PodNuts Daily, it's very, very cool to hear him, how he accomplishes a lot of his day-to-day tasks in his business being a blind user. And yeah, I can see how he would definitely come into mind when you're thinking about something like this.
Yeah. Very cool stuff. This next one I saw on Lil Putin. And I know, I can't say it right.
It's okay.
Posting header alone had my attention from the minute, say, go. And it's Zeals, Z-E-A-L-S-Z, Zeals GK802 quad core mini PC can run Android and Ubuntu. What? And it's literally $100 if you go to geekbuying.com, which I've never heard of. I'm not going to lie. A Geekbuying quad core, they say here on this one, Android mini PC Cortex A9, which I believe is a little bit faster processor than an A10, with 1 gig of DDR3 RAM. They call it a TV dongle box, but apparently can dual boot or multi boot Android and Ubuntu. And if you look at this thing, it's very misleading, the physical size of it, until you look deeper at the pictures. This is literally not much bigger than the MK802, but it's a quad core A9, which is better than the A10, I'm 99% sure, processor. Man, that's cool.
Yeah, one of the, where is it? Oh yeah, the initial screenshot on the Lilliputing article has a cable mess, which is making my skin itch. But beside that, Martin knows what I'm talking about. yeah, the size of this device, man, it is in a quad core. What is it? Is it $93 plus shipping at geekbuying.com? $93.99. Free shipping. You don't even have to pay shipping.
Yeah, looking at Amazon, I'm seeing a lot of like devices. I don't think I'm finding the exact device by name. It's very unclear when I'm looking at it, but I'm seeing some of these things for like $70, $60, $70 that look shape, form factor wise, just about the same there.
I wouldn't trust just the shape. Yeah, we'll be shopping forever if we.
And yeah, when I first saw that picture too, I will agree, my skin crawled. With all the cables just flopping around.
Let's just say zip ties are my best friend.
Yeah. Okay, we have one more link in here. Was this entered by you?
Yep, I put it in there. Okay, this was shared to me by a couple different people. I believe Bill Wilson was one of them, so thank you, Red. I'm becoming more and more interested in security because I want to learn how to secure not only my own network, but then start to kind of take it on as another tech hobby, because I feel that not only is it very interesting from several different angles, but it's also very important to just be security conscious at all. I think it's important. So for my own benefit, I've been looking more into it in different devices. And this was kind of dropped on my doorstep from a couple different people. It is a customized Android tablet specifically for penetration testing. And it's called the Pwn Pad from a company called Pony Express. And, of course, Pony is P-W-N-I-E, which that was cool. but if you go to PonyExpress.com, they do have a variety of devices which you can use for penetration testing. If you are a professional using these in your day-to-day, then, yeah, it's a great device. This one is, it looks like a little, the Pwn Pad specifically is a Nexus 7, but it's specifically engineered to work with their, it almost looks like a little one antenna wireless dongle via an OTG cable plugged into the bottom of it. But it's running a large number of the pen testing software, all optimized as a mobile device on an Android tablet, which I thought was very cool. Because when you see devices like this, it's usually you're able to run one or two of these tools on like a laptop, which can be, you know, a bulky device if you're using this in your day to day. And that being said, the price tag is a bit high for consumer level use. The Pwn Pad itself is, I think, $795. But if you're a security professional that wants a nice, powerful, and multi-purpose mobile tool, I think that this is a great option. The reviews on it are very good. And like I said, they do have other variety of devices on their site. And I actually never heard of them. So not only was I happy to see this device and see a Nexus 7 utilized for something like this, but I was also happy to learn about their company and some of the products that they offer. So... Dor, did you read about this at all this week?
I did see it. I didn't read a whole lot about it, but I can tell you the default wireless chipset in a Nexus 7 will not allow the wireless. Okay, the wireless card in there cannot be put into promiscuous mode or the correct promiscuous mode to do a large amount of this testing. That's why you have a USB dongle connected with a little Wi-Fi device. And they also say featuring extended battery. So I would like the idea if they do replace the battery in it with an even bigger, longer life battery. That would make more of a reason to go with this company on it. And I'll say, real security professionals, you can write this off as a business expense. That's right. My logic.
Right. And it sort of sets that barrier of entry from just, you know, any little kid on the street getting this thing and doing some damage with it. So
Yeah. Because let me just tell you something. But the kinds of tools that are listed on here, oh, you can do some damage.
Yeah. I've been reading about a few of these. Let me tell you. Yeah. But it just goes to show you, you know, if you're not really up on your security knowledge, there are some and this would also be, even if you're not thinking about buying this device, this is very cool because there are some software tools that I have heard of on this list. There are some that I have not. And now, just by having this list of software that's included with this pad, I can go research these things individually and see how I might be able to learn and implement them into my security knowledge. So even if you're not planning on buying the device, that's a worthwhile link to follow just for that information alone, I would say.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Definitely cool looking. I don't know nothing about no security, is what I'll say.
I know very, very little, but I'm excited to learn more. So, but yeah, that I thought was a very, very cool implementation into a device of something like that that I definitely wanted to bring up on the show. So, yeah, I hope you guys liked it. All right, we got one email to read, so we'll go ahead and do that. Rob writes in, "Hey Cody and Dor, I've been running Ubuntu 12.10 for a while now and have learned a great deal about .deb packages. Are there any differences between .debs and .rpm packages? Forever a listener, Rob." And I gotta say, before Dor explains this, because he responded to Rob already, and this is why Dor is the Linux maven, because he comes up with just mind-blowing, amazing ways to break down something like this into a way that anyone can understand it. And if you guys don't know what I mean, check out his Linux for Rest of Us videos, because he does a lot of that in those videos with similar questions like this and even more difficult questions. But, Dor, would you read aloud how you answered him?
Okay, well, I'll read it verbatim because it's actually true what I said. And it's, "Hello, Rob. Yeah, it's like, I literally wrote that in because I literally had to pause, stop, and think. And I said, the difference between car fuel types. You have unleaded gas and diesel fuel. Both are technically fuels, but the cars determine which fuel you have to use. Okay, it's the same basic thing with these .deb and RPM packages. The distro you're on determines which fuel, which package that you use. If you're on a Red Hat-based distribution, whether it's Red Hat, OpenSUSE, Fedora, Mandrake, Magia, whatever, you should use RPM packages. If you're on a Debian-based system, Debian, Ubuntu, Linux Mint, Solus OS, One Branch, Descent, all these other ones, you need .deb packages. The one caveat I'll say right here is not all RPMs are made the same. There is such thing as OpenSUSE specific RPM packages, Fedora specific RPM packages. So you want to be a little bit more careful on RPM distributions, okay? But in Linux, you can technically install RPM packages on a Debian-based distribution with a tool called Alien, A-L-I-E-N. With that tool, you can technically install RPM packages or Slackware packages or lots of other packages from lots of other distributions on your Ubuntu system. But to me, it is utterly ridiculously always safer to download the package that was supposed to be for your distribution. Only install packages intended for another distribution, basically, when all else fails. I mean, when you have no choice but that. But technically, you could.
Just like you could throw diesel into an unleaded gas type car, and it would run for a while, but then there are going to be consequences.
Right. Or you could replace bacon with bacon bits, but it's not the same. Sooner or later, your brain will figure it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, or when your wife tries to pull a fast one, you go, hey, you want this bacon? I'm like, yeah, I want to try this bacon. I chew it, and I'm like, what's up with this bacon?
Turkey
bacon. Because it's either turkey. Yeah, it's turkey or veggie bacon or some crap bacon. And she's like, I got you. Or she tried the same thing with, this is not Linux related unless they use Linux software, the factory they use to make the Idaho and fake mashed potatoes. I hate mashed potatoes. I mean, I hate fake mashed potatoes, the dry potato flakes mix up, eat the fake mashed potatoes. Dude, just get a potato, heat it up, put some stuff in it, mix it up, whip it, you had a mashed potato, right? My wife, for whatever reason, likes that. She would try to pull that on me, I'd take one bite of it. I'm like, yeah, it's fake mashed potato. Put the bowl down. Go back to eat my steak or whatever. He's just like, how'd you know? I was like, because it's night and day.
Well, it's obvious. I mean, to me, it's very obvious. My sister also, she's a fan of the boxed potato, mashed potatoes. I'm a little freaked out by them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because potatoes ain't that hard. Granted, if you do it wrong, you have potato soup, but it's still not that hard.
When we're all living on the moon and we can't grow potatoes yet, then yeah, I'll bring those bags of potatoes, throw a little bit of butter and, water in there, shake it up.
Right.
Heat it out in the space jet pod deal thing. Eat mashed potatoes out of a little tin bag, but until then, no. No, thank you. And I'll find a way to do it with the Raspberry Pi. Stay tuned.
Exactly.
There we go. All right. Well, that is the end of our show. Let me just say, please send us in more emails to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com because we are out. I will remind everyone, based on last week's show, and this will be a good plug too, northeastlinuxfest.org. Our good friend Jonathan Nato is annual Linux Fest, the third year, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Third year in a row is happening in Cambridge, Massachusetts, the weekend of March 16th and 17th. Dor and I will both be there as speakers, and I will also be the LAN party enthusiast, or known as the guy who made the LAN party better. We'll see. If you guys are in the area during that weekend, please come out and let us know. We would love to meet the fans or listeners any which way you can. And thank you upon Jonathan's behalf for the great success that we had with his Sonar campaign through Indiegogo. He got quite a bit of money, which I know he's going to be using for some great causes. A lot of you responded to not only our show requests for help with the campaign, but also helped with donations, contributions, and with spreading the word on Google+, which at the last minute we raised quite a bit more than what he would have if we hadn't pushed so hard. So thank you very much. But in direct relation to Northeast Linux Fest, I asked last week if you guys would send in emails. Dor and I are going to be there for sure. Russ Winter, the Techie Geek, is going to be there. And I had spoken to Russ, and he said he was up for it. If you guys would like us to conduct some interviews between each other, just some kind of impromptu things, just to create some extra content for you guys, we're totally up for it. Obviously, time would be kind of a crunch, but we will find the time to do some things. However, if there are some questions that you would like answered, whether it be, let's say hypothetically, if I sat down with Russ for an hour or half hour, 45 minutes or whatever, what are some things that you would like me to ask him and vice versa? Or if he were to sit down with Dor, or if I were to sit down with Dor, because, Dor and I talk every week, but there might be some things that we haven't talked about that you want to hear. So please send in those questions to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com, and we will do what we can to make that happen.
Absolutely. I already know my number one question for Russ.
Ooh.
Hey,
can you give
Russ,
us a teaser?
Can I have some more of that beer?
I will say that with him and with Tracy both, my glass never got empty. It was because not only do they make great beer, but they're gentlemen. They're absolute gentlemen. But yeah, man, he's bringing some homebrew there. And it's because of him, I will say that Russ helped me contribute money to Jonathan's Indiegogo campaign, because I've been saving up money to take with me specifically for beer, right? I had a little Nelf beer fund, and I thought, wait, I don't need this money. Russ is going to be there. So I just threw all that money at the Indiegogo campaign.
Well, I mean, you should have some money.
Oh, man, I'll have some, but I mean, dude, you know me. I have to have, I have to get snore strips and all the business, but yeah.
For what? You ain't gonna wake me up, man.
I have some travel amenities that are not being provided for me by my by my people that are helping me stay in Elf, so that's fine. But yeah. I was happy to do it, and part of it's because of Russ. So thank you, Russ. So Door, where can we find you these days?
Just go to doordoorgeek.com. I said it before, I'll say it again. It's going to go through a little bit of a change. I don't know when. If you want to keep up on everything, basically, podnuts.com is where I'm most active. I've also been known to hang out on podnuts.com/lounge, and I've also been known to hang out on the Mumble server over at openspeak.cc. Or you can always just hit me up on Google Plus, and as long as my phone is still working, fingers crossed, then I can reply in a timely fashion.
Very cool. Very cool. Glad to hear it. And glad to hear that you're having some new developments with doordoorgeek.com.
Oh, not really. It's just, it's in my head.
Well, but you got plans, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's not. I mean, you might think it's stagnant now, but man, the gears are turning.
Yep.
There you go.
Making all kinds Brave of new, noise, too, man. Woo.
Brave New World. Yep, all that grinding metal. That's fine. You keep it in your head.
Yeah.
The grinding metal, not the ideas. I want the ideas.
A little bit of both.
There you go. All right. I'm Cody Cooper. You can contact me at Cody@podness.com, which several of you did. And I said last week I also donated $5 for everyone who contacted me via that email address. And so I thank you. And your contact not only gave me a little bit of a heartwarming, like, oh, people do care about me. I also paid it forward and threw some more money at Jonathan's campaign. So thank you very much for sending those in. However, I would say, honestly, the best way to contact me day in and day out, just Google Plus, because I'm checking it several times a day. That or the email address, the best two ways. I have several URLs parked right now, but I'm not doing anything with them. I got some projects in the fire, though, so coming soon. Please, of course, speaking of Jonathan Nato, please go to theacf.co and sign up to be a subscriber if you would like to help support his efforts into bringing accessible computing to those who need it, who would otherwise be left behind. You can sign up for a donation subscription as little as $2 a month, which will go a long way, believe it or not, even if just a few more people each week get on board. It does a world of good. And you feel good every time you see that little automatic debit come out of your account. I can speak to that myself. To send in a voicemail, please call 7076-PODNUT. That is 707-676-3688. You can watch Linux for the Rest of Us live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. To support PodNuts, please use the following links, and remember, you don't pay any extra for using these links. They are, of course, podnuts.com/Amazon or /Newegg/eBay/deals/clothing, and we would really appreciate it. Thank you very much for listening, and please remember that Linux is not just for the rest of us, it is for all of us. Good night.